And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Casey Royalman, a.k.a. Troy Olson, sitting in my humble abode here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. On your screen, I don't know what you guys see for sure, because this is we're trying the whole live thing again, and we know how well that goes. But this handsome guy, if it's showing the right one with the big old beard, that's my good friend Jeff Herr. And, of course, the slightly less hairy feller there is Michael Engel with the Go Royals towel behind him. I took home a blue and a white one from the one playoff game I'm going to get to go to this season. Gentlemen, how are we doing, Mike?
I've been getting all right, you know. Nothing really exciting happening, so I'm just trying to, like, find something to do, you know, something to think about. But it's all right, I guess.
Well, you know, and I think we need to talk about some Royals action in the, Florida or Arizona Fall League.
Sure, we got to do our prospect countdown. We're going to
we got to start that, you know.
With 99.
Just like a normal October.
Right.
Jeff, how are you doing?
You know what? I could not be better right now, because joking aside, our Kansas City Royals, the team that we have done a show about every week for the last, is it 3 years now? And they're finally, not only did they make the playoffs, but they're in the flipping World Series, which means this is the first ever World Series edition of the Kansas City Baseball Vault, which makes me feel fantastic.
It's awesome.
I'm gonna reminisce here for a second, because that's what I do best, is I reminisce. So about, what's it been now, Mike, 3.5 years? We started in March.
Our first show was March of 2011 with guest Christian Colon,
who, of course, has to play a big part in the first ever playoff run in 29 years. Yeah. And, oh, my phone's ringing, and that's going to be very distracting. I do apologize. It's the podcast from you and I, Mike. How do you like that? It was I was trying to fix something and managed to start that as my ringtone.
There is it wouldn't be the show without some kind of weird thing happening like
that. I like that I said we were going to have a perfect show before I started. So anyways, so
three we made it about 2 minutes. So right. That's record.
3.5 years ago, we started. Well, I came up with this little idea for the Royal Man Report. It was going to be my show. It was going to be something that was going to launch me onto the airwaves. 610 or 810, they were going to love it, and they were going to pick it up. And the Royals were going to do great, and we were going to get rich. And then Michael Engel, who didn't like my writing, emailed me and said, "Hey, I would like to do a podcast if you were still thinking about doing that." And I said, "Sure, I need a first guest anyways, or a first co-host anyways, and I've got this big guest planned." And so it was my show, and Mike was going to come on it, and Kings of Kaufman was going to support it, and because Mike was the editor at the time, and it was going to be fantastic, and we were going to make all this money. Still haven't made any money.
We've stopped losing money, though.
Right. So we had a studio. I had to take days off to do roller derby. Enter Jeff Herr, Chris Kamler, of course. All that time, we were just talking about a bad baseball team. Now, fast forward to the last 6 months, I've been MIA because of work and family and other stuff, and trying to hold in where I can, and was trying to do some other stuff and just haven't been able to make it happen. But Jeff and Mike have been holding it together. Jeff's been doing a phenomenal job as a host, really coming into his own. And now here we are, 3.5 years later, we're finally talking about a team that is winning, and not only winning, but they are headed to the World Series. And, I mean, I think we all kind of wanted that to happen, but really, honestly, guys, did either of you two see this becoming a World Series team this time last year?
I mean, if you go back and listen to the shows, I mean, there's two things. To answer your question straight up, no is the answer.
Right.
But we did say that, and I brought this up last week, but I still want to give us credit, because I'm happy that we recognize this, that we recognize that playoffs are a different brand of baseball, and even going back to as far as midseason last year when they were in the hunt but weren't really, you know, didn't make it. We were still talking about how the team could make some noise in the playoffs, even though they weren't really built for the regular season. So, I mean, even in my wildest dreams, if I thought this team was the perfect storm for a playoff run, I still don't know that I ever expected it to actually happen and be in the World Series. So this is just, it's still blowing my mind. I can't even really get my head around it.
Yeah, I didn't think so at all. And looking through this year, I mean, there were times, you know, in May they had another swoon. They had, you know, point where they could not score runs at all. There was that stretch where James Shields seemed to have a rough start every time out. And then at one point the Royals were 48-50, and, you know, it looked like they really needed to look towards next year. And then
we talked about trading James Shields.
Talked about trading James Shields, and good God, thank God they didn't do that. Thank Absolutely. God we're not running the team, I guess. God, because they went on another July run. They pretty much owned baseball through the entire month of August, and played even better than the ridiculous run they went on last year. And then, you know, not only were they in first place, they held it for 30 days. They faded a bit. I think the pressure kind of got to them, and they may have gotten a little bit tired and worn down. But, you know, then they made it. You know, they snuck it out as like a war of attrition. They snuck through. They got into that wild card spot. They had that awesome game. You know, I'd have been happy with that. Just get to the wild card game and compete. And shoot, they've done a lot more than that.
And it's been a pretty amazing all-around experience for this season for the fans. And, I mean, I drove 26 hours round trip just to come see one game. And thank God for my friend Nick, who had a ticket, because I couldn't have afforded tickets otherwise. And it's just been an amazing run. And, you know, the thing is, James Shields really hasn't been that good in the playoffs. So he was really good to get us there, but he hasn't been that good in the playoffs. And my wife, you know, she saw the big Moose catch and has seen some of what Moose has done. So she thought he was going to be the MVP in the ALCS, which he probably could have been. I think you could have had 9 to 12 guys that could have been the MVP on the ALCS team because of so much great happened. But I think Lo Kane was the right call there. I mean, you go back and you just watch what he's done in the ALCS, the ALDS, and the wild card game. Does James Shields have anything? Are we talking about James Shields being 0-2 if it isn't for that defense right now, Jeff?
I mean, I think so. And there's a lot. We actually had this. I had this discussion with a friend of mine by text message. We were who lives in Portland, but he's a huge Royals fan, and it was who's the MVP so far the playoffs, and I think we kind of landed on Lorenzo Cain as well. And this was even before they had clinched the series against Baltimore, the LCS. But you had a list, like you were saying, that there was, you know, Lorenzo Cain. You had Eric Hosmer, who had a claim to it. You know, you could make the argument for Mike Moustakas. You can make the argument for Greg Holland. The dude has 6 saves in 8 games in the playoffs. You could make Brandon Finnegan. You could almost make that argument. I mean, he straight up saved. He didn't get the save stat, obviously, but he basically saved 2 games in this little run. And I think the ALCS MVP award is more along the lines of best, MVP of the playoffs to this point so far. And I think Kane and Hosmer were probably your top two. And I think Kane is where I would have landed as well. But that just goes to show how great the run has been, that not only can you have, more than one worthy candidate, but, I mean, you could make the argument for several people on this team that were, not only the most valuable player of the ALCS, but of the playoffs to this point.
That's why I think it works. That's why I think they're at this point, because there's so many people who've contributed. There's not, like I've said it in times of struggle, where there's not one guy that you're afraid of in this Royals lineup. There really isn't. But at this stage, the way that these guys are playing, there's not a lot of holes either. Like, everybody has been contributing something down the stretch, late September and into this playoff run, to where, even Omar Infante's got a couple of hits, Moustakas has 4 homers, Hosmer's driving in runs, Gordon's coming up with big hits, Kane was 8-for-15 in that series, he had that sack bunt that set up the 2 runs in game 4, he scored 5 runs, he had the only stolen base in the series. In 4 games, all we heard was speed, speed, speed. Only one guy got a stolen base for the Royals, and it was Lorenzo Kane. Not to mention all the... It wasn't Billy Butler this time. But all the crazy catches that he made, too. I mean, he was catching things that he was 80 feet away from, and you know, the cool little StatCast stuff that we've talked about before, that's so cool to see that in action, because it showed that his route was 99.7% efficient to the most direct path to the ball, which is ridiculous.
That's insane.
He's pretty much as sexy as an outfielder, and the fact that he didn't start playing baseball until he was a sophomore in high school makes you wonder how much more can he do?
Yeah. I mean, he is a crazy athletic guy, but, I mean, his instincts are really good, too. The other, in Baltimore, that hit, he was on second base, Hosmer hit that little bloop into shallow left, and he read it perfectly immediately. He knew it was going to fall, and that's the reason he was able to score. And the Royals ended up winning that game by a couple runs. He also had the key double, you know, two doubles in that game. So, I mean, he came up big in a lot of different ways in the Baltimore series, on both sides, you know, on the plate and out in the field. And yeah, I think he was worth it. You know, Moustakas, you can't really overlook what he did, too, with, you know, that line drive catch, which was probably a more difficult play in some regards because it was hit right at him and he had to react immediately and make the play. But, you know, then that it's going to be an iconic thing if they finish this off. It's going to be like George Brett sliding into the dugout, that thing where he's jumping into the dugout suite. That was just an awesome moment where he just, you know, we're watching it. I was on the first base side way, way up in the nosebleeds. And I saw him go for it. I was like, I'm thinking it's in the seats. And he didn't give up on it. And I see him set up the jump, and he makes the jump. And everybody's just like, did he get it? Did he get it? And then explosion. So, you know, I think that's going to be one of those images for this entire playoff run that you're going to see for years, because it's just, it's, you know, Derek Jeter diving into the stands kind of thing, too. It's just one of those big playoff moments. So I wouldn't have been shocked to see him get it either. But, you know, all in all, it's a team thing. So, you know, everybody gets to go along the World Series, and I don't think anybody really cares who the MVP was either.
I want to thank our live viewers. We do have a few trickling in here and there. This was kind of an impromptu thing, so we're not expecting many people to follow us at RoyalsPodcast.com, KansasCityBaseballVault.com. He couldn't put it on Pintar Press because it's running slow right now due to the retweet that their website got about all the stuff that went on earlier this year in the articles on.
It's about bringing back Sungwoo. They're currently Sungwoo is meeting with one of the filmmakers who did a 30 for 30 for ESPN. They're in Korea talking to Sungwoo's boss to see if he can get time off to come back to Kansas City for the World
Series. Shut up. I had not heard about that.
Oh, yeah. And so there's the hashtag bring back Sungwoo, which is going all over Twitter. It was trending in Kansas City within 5 minutes. It was national in 20 because they want to show that people want him back here. And I don't know how it's going to work out. You know, he just started this job in September. The Korean culture is very big on work ethic and, you know, long hours, very little vacation. So it's probably long odds that he's going to get to go, but you got to try it, you know? I mean,
you know what gets the attention of people like folks in Korea is big amounts of money. And there's a good chance that ESPN has big amounts of money. So
I would think so.
I wouldn't rule out the possibility of him coming back. I haven't been able to be part of any of that, so I'm really kind of bummed about that.
The guy has been—he's gonna be on TV if he comes back. I mean, he went viral when he was here in August. So if he's got this company, let's put their name all over the place with him. That's just
free advertising.
Yeah, that's an incomplete just advertising up the wazoo, if I can use a phrase that I've never really used before.
Go for it.
Yeah,
a lot of things are happening that haven't really happened before.
Go crazy. So. Yeah, I think it'd be a great story if he could come back, because it was really kind of a charmed week when he was here. And incidentally, when he was here, the Royals played the Giants and swept them in 3 games. So
it only makes sense, right? Yeah, if that's who ends up coming to play us.
Yeah, if you want to, you know, finish the chapter and everything, then there you go. That's kind of what you get. So so that's why Pintar Press is swamped right now. because everybody's tweeting these things because they want them to come back.
So we're losing viewers, so people don't really like us. But okay. Thank you to the fake Ned for broadcasting us out too, because he's got a really large following.
For some reason,
following.
For some reason.
You know, 12,000 people like what the Ned Man has to say. So
I'll never get it.
I don't get it. He doesn't either, if you ask him. So
there you go. I don't know. What else are we going to talk about, guys? I mean, really, we could break down the Cardinals and Giants, but I don't see the point in that.
I don't see the point in breaking down the Cardinals. I don't think they're going to win tonight.
I'm not ready to count them out yet. I mean, they've been counted out before and come back and won big. So true. I'm not to that point yet, but wow. Thanks, Ned. Okay, so we jumped literally 300% in viewers since Chris's link.
So from 1 to 3?
No, well, not quite that bad, but close. Jeff's dying over there. Mike's got jokes. You know, let's take a step back first. A little bit on the network. Mike and I did a show actually from Mike's car a couple weeks ago. For some reason, it didn't get posted to the download feeds. I may repost it in another thing that I'm working on. I'm also working on getting an interview. Well, I've got the interview. I just need to do it with the founder and CEO of TickIQ. He wants to talk about how the Royals have affected ticket prices for the playoffs, which is kind of a different side of this than we have
visited. Crazy.
And then I'm also going to get back with Brad Cook, who is the PR director for Out of the Park Baseball, who's a good friend of ours, and he's been doing a simulation of every game, and so I want to see how close they've been doing it on their blog, which I haven't had a chance to keep up on, so I'm going to bring him on, let him catch us up on everything that's gone on. So that's going to come up in the next week or so, and then I'm sure that I've got an interview with Jason Adam yet to happen, and you know, visit him, and he's got to be going crazy right now. I mean, he's in his own way. I asked him this a long time ago, and he wouldn't give me an answer because he didn't want to think about the fact that he could be a piece to a World Series run by not being here, and that's exactly what he's become, because Josh Willingham has been a big part of this run, and there's a very good chance that Willingham retires at the end of this year, and I think that trade actually might end up in the long run hurting KC more than the Will Myers trade, but right now nobody cares about any of that. You got the dunce beating the brilliant captain or whatever the New York Times said. You've got
Chessmaster.
I think I tweeted the other day that we've all been yoasted in the process, and we're all super happy about it right now.
Yeah, it's weird. And just yesterday watching the reactions of Ned Yost and Dayton Moore, it was kind of moving in a way because, you know, Dayton Moore's been here for so long. He was the guy who was supposed to bring everything back. He got David Glass to invest in the minors, in scouting and development and all of that. But, you know, there was always, I mean, our criticisms have been pretty apparent on our show every year, you know, that there are things that he does.
Criticisms?
Yeah, I know, right? you know, I mean, it's great that they're here. It doesn't change the fact that he brought in Unieski Betancourt twice or traded J.P. Howell for Joey Gathright or gave away Jeff Kepinger. Or, you know, any of these little things, overpaid Jose Guillen. You know, Jeff Francoeur got a new contract, Mike Jacobs, you know, all the, you know, those are all things that, you know, they happened. You can't ignore them, but at the same time, he's also brought in the guys who are in now. You know, he drafted Hosmer and Moustakas, and they did well enough to get these guys this far. And, you know, he made the Greinke trade that brought in Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar and, you know, set up the academies that developed Sal Perez and Yordano Ventura, and, you know, all made the trade to get Nori Aoki and got Alex Gordon back into not just relevance but stardom. Made the Shields trade, which was controversial at the time, and, you know, we'll see how it pans out in, you know, 4 years if Will Myers is an MVP type guy. But the Royals get they've got a pennant that's going to go up. They got him Wade Davis, who's still available for team control, I think, for 2 more years, who's been just absolute monster as a reliever. And you're 4 wins away from getting a world championship. So, I mean, you know, I mean, what happens in 2018 is really kind of irrelevant to today if they can win a title. Plus, you know, you look at the revenue. We talked very, very briefly last time about, like, what a playoff game brings Kansas City. You know, it's about, Sam Mellinger wrote that it's about $1 million per home playoff game. Well, I mean, they've got at least two more. So they've made, what, $6 million? They'll make $6 million, and that's not, you know, there's still more merchandise. There's season ticket possibilities. There's, you know, all this different stuff. It could be something where they're able to go to advertisers and get more money. It could be something that they can reinvest everything into free agents and keep this rolling. So, you know, just because James Shields is probably gone after this year, maybe they do keep it up. Maybe the pitchers come up and this is the start of a really competitive window and the Will Myers trade becomes irrelevant. Who knows? There's so many, I don't know. It's fun to think about. It's also a little terrifying.
It is, and I think to your to your initial point, you know, I was kind of thinking about this. I was like, and I mentioned this on our email chain today, like, should I bring into question now all my beliefs about baseball and everything I've been, you know, thinking because just of how this has worked out and how I was, you know, it's probably not a stretch to say that I was the most critical of this of the people on this show of the Royals regime, Dayton Moore in particular. But it's something where, kind of like you said, it's as great as it is that they're where they are, you know, it doesn't take away those facts. And I'm not trying to be negative or anything here. Just simply saying that, you know, it's the results are here now, but my issue was, you know, the issues mostly were with the process, which it still, you know, might not agree with, but at this point, it's out the window. I don't think any of us have cared. None of us have mentioned anything negative. This whole run, you know, and it's just been absolutely fair. All we've talked about in our email chain, whereas, you know, the majority of the season, it was complaining about the typical stuff that we complain about, you know, poor plate discipline, you know, bad managerial decisions, personnel, lineups, and things like that. But, you know, lately, the last month plus or so, it's been, you know, just pretty positive. And it's unbelievable to see. And, yeah, like you said, I mean, you know, next year, a couple years from now, it doesn't matter right now because they can, they can make this thing happen. And it is just, it is unbelievable how, and it feels to me like, as if we're keeping with the theme of going a little bit down memory lane, as most will, some will probably know, I was kind of brought on as the football guy when we were trying to get a little bit more breadth to the scope of the show. And so I think most people know football's always been my first love as a sport, you know, but I don't think my Royals fandom is in question. But anyway, it feels to me like, if you go back and remember the 2007 New York Giants, like this, might have to stick with me here, but and this is just kind of talking a little bit about next year, but they were kind of the team that can barely got into the playoffs, and they kind of stormed through, and they had this, you know, everyone was, they played the undefeated Patriots in the Super Bowl, and the Patriots were throwing the ball over everybody and setting records and offensive points, and everyone was like, it's no longer defense, it's an offensive league, you know, and that's kind of sounds like what we've been hearing, you know, about how, oh, you got to hit home runs now to win in today's baseball and all that kind of stuff, and you gotta have walks and plate discipline and all that, and the Royals kind of bucked that trend just like the Giants did, and now here they are, and then the next year, the Giants came out and were just like gangbusters. I mean, they were killing everybody because they just had confidence and they, you know, they were a different team because they had been there, they'd done it, they knew what, you know, they knew how to do it. And it ended up falling apart because of injuries at the end, but, I mean, they were just, looked like, you know, one of the best teams in a while. And so the reason I bring that up is because I think that with this confidence, especially if the Royals end up winning the World Series, but even if they don't, I mean, next year, even with the loss of James Shields, I think it's something that they can overcome with this kind of newfound confidence and swagger that they have that's just unbelievable and totally, totally deserved. I mean, they have just ripped through the American League. I mean, they beat the three teams that were arguably the three best teams in the American League for pretty much the whole season. I mean, the Angels and the Orioles had the two best records, and then the A's had the best record for almost the entire season up until about the last month or so.
They forgot how to play baseball, though.
True. Yeah. They had, I mean, if the Royals were the A's, like we were kind of wishing they were three quarters of the way through the season, but if the Royals were the A's now, I mean, this would be a very upset fan base and a very different show the last few weeks after seeing that kind of collapse. But thankfully, they're not. And they've ripped through the. I mean, they beat the Angels pretty convincingly. The Orioles. I mean, the Orioles didn't look like they stood a chance. I mean, they got swept in this. They looked. The best thing is that the Royals, whatever their unconventional, you know, mode of play is, I mean, they have proved, even if they've had quite a bit of luck, which all World Series teams do, but they've proved that they belong, because even they've had some games in there where it's been your typical Royals-type games where they didn't get luck. You know, they won 3-2 against the Angels. They won 2-1 against the Orioles twice. You know, they won 4-1, but they were tied 1-1 for most of the game into the late inning. So it's not like it was just, you know, tons and tons of all these crazy, crazy breaks. I mean, they definitely had some, but overall, I mean, they proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that they belong, that they can compete, that they're should be looked at as a top team right now. And I think next year you're going to see a lot of that in the preseason polls, regardless of how this World Series ends up, even with the loss of Shields. I mean, I think people are going to recognize that with the talent and the swagger this team has, they're going to be something to be reckoned with. So hopefully, as you alluded to, Mike, that, you know, maybe the Royals have some rookies that are close, and Kyle Zimmer and Sean Manaea, that can hopefully, you know, come up and maybe lessen some of the loss from James Shields, and maybe they just kind of don't miss a beat, and this becomes the beginning of a competitive window, which would be awesome.
So I want to jump in real quick. Clint Scholes has added a few comments on our Google+/YouTube page. There's a lot of ways to have input on the show, and we want you involved. I know we've had some listeners come and go. You can definitely tweet us at KC Baseball Vault or the individual guys if you like something that somebody says. I'm at KC Royal Man. The gentleman on the middle is Michael Engel, at Michael Engel, MichaelEngel. And, of course, the gentleman on the end is Jeff Herr at the Jeff Report. I always mess yours up because it's the only one that – well, mine's not my name, but I know mine. So, but Clint Scholes, who is at Clint Scholes, added the defense he built. I'm assuming he's referring to Dayton Moore.
Probably Dayton.
It was ridiculous. So many Brewers, the fans have to be ticked. while we were talking about the pitching situation, he says Kyle Zimmer is going to effing kill. And we were watching the offense.
He had like 11 strikeouts in his last start in the Arizona Fall League. So that's our Arizona Fall League update.
Yes.
There you go. You know, and
the last spring of Arizona Fall League updates in October complete.
Right. And I mean, we spent a lot of time on the Arizona Fall League last year. In fact, we were talking about me taking a week of vacation to go down there and cover the Arizona Fall League because it was such an important part of the show this time of year, and to think it doesn't matter anymore.
I remember one time I remember one time we spent like 10 minutes talking about Chester Cuthbert with Jason Parks in October. So my, how things have changed.
I wish we could talk to Jason Parks about Chesler Cuthbert, but that's a whole other story.
Wish we could talk to him about a lot of stuff, but
stupid Cubs and stupid Cubs. Astros too. They take all of our favorite
poaching
people.
Poaching all our awesome guests.
No kidding. And then Clint also added, we were watching the offense and should have been paying greater attention to the defense, which is definitely true as well, because this defense is huge. You can also give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down to the show in general off of a link that's on our YouTube page right now. That if you're watching, you're probably on the YouTube page. If you scroll down, I linked a plus link in there. You can actually thumbs up and thumbs down the show live, parts you like, parts you don't, and go from there. But continuing on, I think I don't want to talk a lot about the Arizona Fall League and the guys to come, because I think there's going to be a lot of time to do that coming up here. Yeah. But I do want to say this. I don't want people to be real worried or to be dampered by the fact that more than likely James Shields won't be back, because honestly, I don't know that I want James Shields back, because you'd have to give him more than a 2-year contract. I don't think it's a good idea to give him a big contract. I think that's what's going to happen. And I don't want that to happen. And guys like Kyle Zimmer and Manea, and Sean Manea, if you don't know. Sean Manea is huge, by the way. If you've ever – I was walking around spring training, and that guy just towers me. He is
he's a big dude.
Humongous individual. But he's a good chance to be up next season, if not right away by midseason. Jason Adam – oh, wait, no, that won't be happening.
Nope.
Sore spot for me. If you've been a longtime follower of this show, you know my man crush on Jason Adam, who is marrying Miss Delaware.
The man crush is strong.
It is, and it's sad. And then, you know, but you got Manaea, you've got Zimmer, you know, who else? And
Brandon Finnegan, I mean, he's going to get every shot that he can to start. You know, there's some conjecture on whether he'll stay in the bullpen or actually be able to make it as a starter, but they're going to give him a shot at it. And damn, if he has not looked incredibly impressive so far.
Yeah, apparently the only player to play in a College World Series and an MLB World Series in the same year.
I was going to bring that up.
I was wondering about that last night.
Yeah, I was wondering if David Price did it.
That's the one I was going to wonder, because I was like, Vanderbilt's usually in the College World Series, so that's actually surprising that they weren't.
TCU tweeted out that he was the first ever to play in the College World Series and then in the actual World Series. And then you add to that the 8-0 start, which they eclipsed the Rockies of 07, I think it was, that went 7-0 and then got swept by the Red Sox. And then I believe it was the 73 Reds also went 7-0. Now,
76.
What's that?
76 Reds.
76 Reds. Now, Jeff, maybe you can answer for me. Back then, that would have just been the CS and the World Series, right? So they won it all. They swept
the entire. Yeah.
Yep.
So that would be pretty cool. I'm definitely not expecting this team to go 11-0. I think that's a lot to ask. Although I think we've kind of, and it might be the bandwagon fan effect too, but you hear a lot on the radio nationally, and I listen to a lot of national radio out here, and they're even talking about the Royals on local radio out here because they're such a great story.
If you want to talk baseball, there's nobody else to talk about.
Right,
because about the Royals,
and it's crazy. And I mean, Jim Rome was just going on and on about how much he loves the Angels, and people in California are calling us dirt people, and you know, and how we're poor and fat and everything, every other cheap insult they can come up with. And then of course you've got a few Royals fans that are firing back, and a good number of them are bandwagon fans. And Doug Gottlieb was trying to call out the Royals bandwagon fan because there was only 15,000 people at the stadium midseason. Well, midseason this team sucked, and people have been watching this team suck for 29 years, and so there's a reason why people were staying away from the stadium. They were making a point, so I don't really hate on our fans for that, and sure, there's a lot of bandwagon fans. That's going to be in anywhere, but there's a lot of really good fans in Kansas City, and I don't think if you've never lived in the Midwest, you don't understand what that's like. But you know, if San Francisco is the team that the Royals end up playing, and if the Royals do some miracle and win this whole thing, you know, they're essentially the state champion of California. So I can understand the California fans being upset about their whole state being embarrassed by us dirt people here in the Midwest. But
if I may interject on the fan topic, couple things. Number one, I think if you look in the context of any other sports team, a baseball team, if they endured, I would almost guarantee that if they endured 29 years of not only losing, but the majority of that time just putrid, awful baseball teams. And
like not even a shot.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking, you know, the 56 and 106 records and losing 100 games 4 out of 5 years. I mean, if you had any team that dealt with that for that long, I would guarantee that the attendance levels at those games would not nearly be as high as the Royals were for those during those losing periods. I mean, the Royals, as bad as they've been, have still averaged, I mean, the lowest point they've averaged was like, I don't know how many, you know, 12,000 or something. I don't know. Back in like when it was really, really, really bad. But I mean, you've got Tampa Bay Rays can't sell out playoff games. And I mean, you saw Orioles fans, Angels fans leaving the ballpark of a playoff game, you know, before it was even over. Whereas the Royals fans had every reason to leave a game like that Oakland A's game, down 7-3 to the Royal Killer John Lester in the eighth inning, six outs away from elimination. After all the years of losing, you know, it was easy to just turn it on and say, same old Royals. They gave it a go, but they didn't really make it. And then nobody left. I mean, that stadium was still packed all the way through the 12th inning. Every single game, I went to two playoff games after the wild card game, and I stayed until the very last pitch and after, and the entire stadium was packed on their feet the whole time. So, I mean, I don't even know that it was, and I had this discussion with Hey Cameraman on Twitter and Terry Blassenbray, I think that's how he pronounces his name.
Yeah, at El Sycamore.
Yeah, El Sycamore. Where it was just, you know, there's a difference, I think, between bandwagon fans and then when you endure as much losing as the Royals did. Like for me, and I think a lot of people, you know, we were fans and wanted to do well. I mean, obviously, hell, I have a freaking podcast that we've been doing for the last 3 years about this team. But when you're that bad for that long, I did not make the Royals, and a lot of people probably didn't make the Royals, a financial priority, especially when you've got competition for it. You know, when the Chiefs have been good the majority of my lifetime, you know, that was more of a priority for me than the Royals. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, you know, when you're a fan, but you know, I still had Royals gear and supported the Royals and went out there when I could. But if I had the money to spend, the priority went to the Chiefs for me. And I'm not ashamed to admit that at all. But, you know, give me a reason to change that, and I will. And the Royals have. And it will change in the future. So,
Jeff,
you know, yeah.
What year did the Kansas City Chiefs move into the Truman Sports Complex?
Let's see. Chiefs were here 19 – oh, crap. Their first year here was 1962,
63. Okay, so they were here before. I couldn't remember if they were in before the Royals or not. So
yeah, but – well, they played at Municipal Stadium for a while, though, so I'm not sure. I mean, I think Truman Sports Complex opened.
It would probably be about
here.
The same time, yeah.
Okay, so, well, my point was when did the Chiefs become – because I'm not a big Chiefs fan. I've never claimed to be. I love to go to Chiefs games, but I don't know their history the way I do the Royals. But I'm sitting on Kansas City Royals page and looking at the records, and they have attendance figures here every year going back to 62 or 69. Now, I'm sure some of this has to do with what the stadium could hold at the time. But starting in 1977, they drew between 1.8 million fans and 2.3 million fans every single year except for strike-shortened seasons up until 1994. And then that is when the Kansas City fan base said, enough. And I don't know if that corresponds with some history. I think that's about the time that Joe Montana came to
the strike. George Brett had retired. Kaufman died.
Yep. I mean, all that happened within the span of, like, 18 months.
Yeah. And then in 95, they traded off David Cohen and Brian McCray in spring training. So that's when the rebuilding started, and they never really got it back anywhere close until, you know, late 90s. They had Dye and Damon and Beltran and Sweeney.
No pitching.
But they didn't have any pitching. So it didn't really matter. If you score six runs and give up eight, who cares?
And then the Royals, so along that line, so in 94, they dropped to 1.4 million fans. And I'm not going to go over year every year, but they stayed down below one. Their biggest year for a while was 2003, they jumped to 1.7 million. Mm-hmm. Then they had a couple years where they dropped down to 1.3, and then they popped back up between the upper 1.5s and 1.7s all the way through until this year when they averaged just under 2 million. And yes, should that number hit 2 million this year? Absolutely. But this team was bad, and they've been coming up bad year after bad year after bad year. So you want to tell me there's a fair weather fan out there, but there's still 1.7 million people in that stadium in 2012 when this team was 72-90? You want to tell me that they're bad fans when there's still 1.3 million people in the seats when this team's 56-106 or 62-100? there's a lot of really good people in Kansas City, and there's a lot of great fans out there. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but for a small market team playing in these playoffs, and it being said that they needed L.A. and New York to be in these playoffs, the ratings have been as good as ever.
Oh, yeah.
I think, Mike, you tweeted something on this or posted something in the group about it, but as fans, we have shown up for our team. We have filled the stadium. We've been loud. There was no experience like the game I went to where we – I can't believe I'm going to say this – where we took the ALDS from the Los Angeles Angels in a three-game sweep. I mean, that place was rocking. And that game, I don't think, was like the wild card game because the team got ahead. People didn't know what to do with the lead. They were confused.
It was a party.
Yeah. And literally nobody – and as far as other baseball fan bases are concerned, can really try and talk and say, like, oh, well, that wouldn't happen here and all that kind of stuff, because nobody had to go through what this Royals fan base has. I mean, I guess I haven't looked, you know, in over any 29-year stretch for any organization, but, I mean, there have been teams that have had, you know, the Cubs and the Mariners and the Indians have had some bad luck, but they've also had some really, really good years, some competitive teams, multiple times in the playoffs for all those teams. I mean, you know, the Brewers are probably the closest where they, before they made it back in 08, you know, to complete the circle here when Ned Yost was fired before in the middle of a playoff run. But before they made it there, that was, I mean, they'd gone like 26 years, I think. It was 82 was the last time before that. So, I mean, they're the closest, but just nobody really understands what it's like. And it's, you know, this sounds kind of a lot like justification, and to a certain extent it probably is. But, you know, all the same, I mean, I do think I'm trying to be as objective as possible about this, and I do think it's legitimate to say that, I mean, I just don't think that there would be as many fans supporting this team through thick and thin in many other towns. And part of it is because the Royals have a rich history from the 70s and 80s that kind of carried over quite a bit, even as bad as they were. But it's building now. I mean, it, you know, when I like to call it my sports life, which is different from my real life because things in sports at the end of the day aren't as important. So if I ever say, oh, man, this is the worst thing that's happened to me at a Chiefs game, it's my sports life, and it's not really the worst thing that's ever happened to me. But so the beginning of my sports life, when I could really truly understand and comprehend things and what they meant to me as far as sports, was started about when I was 10 years old. And the Royals were, that would have been about 95, right when things started to tank for the Royals and right when things started to get really good for the Chiefs. And so it's interesting now because how many 10-year-olds, I like to think, are watching this and are just hooked now for life? I mean, it's so amazing. There's going to be – my generation was probably the lost generation, you know, our generation, I should say, probably the lost generation of Royals fans because we really had nothing to root for. You know, most of us were born, couldn't really get a grasp of what that 85 World Series team and that era was about. We've dealt with all this losing. And now hopefully, you know, those 10, 11, 12-year-old kids now are their first memories, first real true understanding memories are going to be of this team right here this year, hopefully a World Series champion, and hopefully a few more years to come. And you're going to start seeing more blue and white than red and gold in this city, and that's something that we haven't seen for a long time, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Aaron Reese, really quick, I want to jump in. Aaron Reese asked about the Dirt People comment again. That was something on the Jim Rome show. That a California fan was referring to, that we're so poor as people that we're dirt covered and what have you. Pat Lanning checking in.
Hey, Patty.
What is his?
Hey. Yeah,
Patty Casey, the doorman at Harry's, I believe he still is.
Mm-hmm.
Great gentleman, part of our show in the past. He says, congratulations, guys. Clint Scholes was updating on the Giants game, which is actually now 2-2. He had mentioned it. Giants went up 2-1, but then the Cardinals tied it back up.
Stupid Cardinals.
I still want the Cardinals to – I still think the Cardinals is a better match, especially if Yachty ends up being out. I kind of want to get to
– I just don't want to deal with the fans.
Uh-oh,
look at that.
But then
now
you get
that
the
down
excuse,
before we
though,
get thrown off the air by MLB.
If Cardinals aren't fans aren't bad enough – the last thing you'd want is like, oh, well, the only reason the Royals won the World Series is because Yadier Molina could play. You know, that's all you'd hear for the next 20 years, 29
right.
years.
Probably.
I'm not gonna rail on Cardinals fans because there's been some amazing Cardinals fans this last week. So there are bad fans in every fan base. We have them too. My friend Nick was treated pretty badly by some people out at the K. He's an Angels fan.
Well, I apologized.
he's a damn Royals, it, he was a Royals season ticket holder with me, and but he always said, you know, six games a year or whatever it might be, he had a root for the team he was born into, which was the Angels, and he lives in Kansas City now, but you know, so he the first playoff series in Kansas City in 29 years, the series, not game, but playoff series, and it's, of course, the Angels. So him and I went, and he took kind of a hard time. But there's bad fans in every fan base. And, yeah, you'll get that. There's still people that are upset about the blown call, but, you know, yeah. It is what it is. So.
Yeah, I do.
You know,
what else we got? Yeah, we don't need to get in that discussion. But
in the car, yeah, it's been done.
Because there was one Baltimore Orioles fan in my entire section in Game 3, and he sat right in front of me, and everyone around was nothing but nice to him. So,
good.
And same deal with the Angels fans that I saw when I went to the game where they clinched the DS. So, in my experience, most of the Royals fans have been pretty classy. But yes, there are. I see it more, a lot more at Chiefs games. But
that guy in the Pats game.
Yeah, I mean the Chiefs sometimes terrible. when the Chiefs are going bad. That's not a fun place to be if you're an opposing fan because it gets ugly. But I think what helps too is and I made this comment to one of my friends. I have never seen this town like this. Like we've seen the Chiefs make some pretty good runs. You know, college sports are always tough because it's so divided. KU, K-State, MU. But you know, Chiefs versus Royals. We've seen the Chiefs be really good, make some runs, but I have never seen a city this euphoric or this city this euphoric and this united. And I think that probably helps some of the fans thing, but it's really amazing. Like it's a different feeling. I've left some really big Chiefs victories and seen some big, you know, celebrations walking out in the parking lot and stuff, but never anything like the other night against Game 3 against Baltimore when they clinched against the Angels. Like I've just never seen anything like it in my life.
And I'm the worst cameraman about switching these angles here, and I do apologize for that if anybody's actually paying attention to that. you know, I'm excited. I can't wait for the World Series. I can't believe that we're talking about the World Series. That's kind of why we're doing the show tonight. Let's see. Aaron, hold on a second. Aaron Reese. What's Aaron's Twitter handle, guys? I should know this.
Deviator.
Deviator 77.
And member of the Triple A podcast, which is outside of our podcast, is by far my favorite podcast because they talk about all the teams except for right now when they're talking a lot about the Royals too. But they do a really good job across the board. And, of course, they're part of RoyalsPodcast.com where you can find our show. During the World Series game, I think there was 5 A's fans. I sat next to one of them, and I was damn classy. Well, of course you were, Aaron. Aaron also made some stuff for my wedding, so I have an incredible respect for Aaron on a personal level too, which is how he got the gig of getting paid no money to talk about the Royals on this network.
lucky guy.
It's an illustrious group.
It is. It's a pretty luxurious, you know, gig to get paid no money to talk about baseball on RoyalsPodcast.com. if you know anybody that'd like to sponsor us, we would sure like to make some money versus no money. You know, if you can help us with that, we can definitely throw you some bones for that.
I don't know. We will gladly promote your business or events. I'm just thinking about, you know, this matchup. The Royals are going to do something different because they're going to have to play National League rules. But I'm not that worried about it because they were 15-5 against the National League this year in interleague play. So I think one of the things, kind of ironically, that they benefit from is that Billy Butler had a down year. So it's not like they're expecting a contribution on offense from Billy Butler, you know, in a way. So that when they have to give up the DH, they're coming down a bit. But it's not quite the stark drop as it would have been in like 2012. So when you've got a guy who's got 30 home run power in 2012, if they'd have had to take away that guy from their lineup, well then you feel a little weird. But the Royals have scratched and clawed, and they've gotten runs by crazy means, and They've got their speed. They've got the ability to put the ball in play. And that might help them out. You look at, you know, just even in the last two games, how they've scored their runs. I mean, one was a ground out. One was a sack fly. And then yesterday it was, you know, infield single, hit by pitch, sack bunt, and fielder's choice and error. And that's how they scored. There's, you know, not one run driven in by a hit. It's crazy. And the other weird thing is the Giants have been doing that too. I think like half their last 22 runs have scored on anything but a base hit, which is very weird. Neither of those probably sustainable. But it shows what that style of play can do when you're just putting the ball in play and able to get guys on and move runners around and see what happens. So I'm not really worried about playing NL rules. It just kind of depends on who they play. And neither of these teams are world beaters. So I'm not really scared of either team. I would prefer San Francisco just because, like Jeff said, the Cardinals factor. I don't want to deal with Cardinals fans. Knowing that there's a chance the Royals could lose, I wouldn't want to hear Cardinals fans chirping about the beating the Royals. I could probably live with it if it was the Giants, but the Cardinals, I'd be sick.
I only want to play the Giants if we're going to – well, I really only want to play either team if we're going to beat them, but I really only want to play the Giants if we beat them, just so I can keep going with this whole California State champion thing.
Well, the Royals were 18-8 against California teams this year too. So
what were they against LA? Do you have that in front of you? Against not against the Dodgers, because they played the Dodgers, right?
They were 1-2 against the Dodgers.
So that's the only team that they have a losing record against. So that really screws up my whole scope of things.
Yes, but they did beat them the one time, so you can have that one.
And that was against Greinke.
I think it was.
I know it was.
Which,
trust me,
thrilled about that. Look at what Puig did in that game, too. Was he 0-for-4?
Something like that. It was a glorious baseball game.
Did he backflip? God help me if he backflipped.
I moved to Albuquerque, and the Royals go to the World Series, and the Dodgers move out of Albuquerque, and the Rockies move in. How much better can it get this year for baseball for me? I mean, I can't stand the Dodgers. I followed the Rockies for years when I lived in Denver. Of course, I love my Royals, and I'd love to have them here, but they're never moving from Omaha, let's be real. I don't know that they'll ever move move their AAA or AA teams because they're perfectly located and they've got such great relationships. I think it would take a lot to even move at AA. Now, A and
your best bet is a low A. I mean, they were in a high desert for a couple of years, weren't they?
Yeah. They're low
That's
A.
That's where Butler played, wasn't he?
Yeah, he played at High Desert. They've switched the low A affiliate a lot because it was High Desert. High Desert is High A.
Was it?
Yeah, because they were in Wilmington.
Sure Butler played in Idaho Falls, though.
They were in, well, their rookie level. They were in Wilmington.
Oh, that's right.
Forever.
Idaho Falls is rookie level.
Then there were two high years Wilmington. They were in High Desert. Then they went back to Wilmington.
Desert's in California, so it's not exactly close to me by any means.
But Low A has been like Burlington.
But that same region is what I'm getting
been, at. Oh, yeah, yeah. They've been in Kane County for 2 years, and then now they're in Lexington. So they've been all over the place. So that one's, I don't know, that one's all over the place. But it's also low A, so.
We've been talking an hour about a team getting to the World Series, and like I said, I'm going to save all the what this team's going to look like next year talk for off-season because I think we're going to have plenty of it. There's a lot of good stuff coming up. Pine Tar Press is rocking out stuff. Walk-Off Talk is rocking off stuff. Triple Play Podcast is rocking out stuff. Am I missing somebody? Kansas City Baseball Vault, of course, is rocking out stuff. I think that's all of us. RoyalsPodcast.com, of course. Go drink at Kelly's. Oh, I was going to say that really quick on the whole Chiefs thing. So I sat there at Kelly's the night before the Angels game, and I counted how many people came in with Chiefs gear. And outside of Terry, who was wearing a Chiefs hoodie, there was one other person that was wearing Chiefs gear. Everybody else was either a zombie because it was Zombie Run night, or they were wearing Royals gear, or they were a Royal zombie. So apparently they were from 1994. But outside of that, It was all Kurt Royal stuff, and I haven't taken off my my playoff hat since I got it at the Angels game, and I don't know that I will take it off. I've been wearing it to work and everything. Thank God I have a job that doesn't care what I wear, because I've been rocking all the Royals gear as much as I could. And I walk into places, and everybody that works in this building that we work in, we're housed inside another company right now that helps us out, and everybody's like, "So I hear nobody watches baseball. I hear the Royals won again." I said, "Yeah, they're in the World Series. That's good, right? Yes, that's very good."
So, I'd say it's pretty good.
We're not a sports town here in Albuquerque. Any final thoughts, Mr. Jeff Herr?
Just again, like the euphoria in this town and how everyone has come together and rooted for this team has just been absolutely amazing to see. I don't know that I do know that I haven't seen anything like it, and it's been absolutely awesome. It's an incredible run. It's been an incredible season, and if you'd ask me 100 times, I'd be happy with as far as they've gotten 100 times, but now they're here, and what the hell, let's just win the whole thing. You know, how about it?
How about that? That sounds like a good plan to me. Michael Engel, what are we doing?
This is awesome. I remember back in 1990, the Royals had just won, I think, 92 games the year before. Bo Jackson was an all-star. George Brett was, still hanging on. They had Kevin Napier. They had Brett Saberhagen. They had all these guys. They had signed Mark Davis. I thought 1990 was going to be the year. And I bought every baseball annual there was, and every single one of them had chosen the Royals as the AL West champions that year. The Royals did not win the AL West, and they sucked. And it was probably it was my first real taste of disappointment in a Royals season. We talked about some of that history, 94 in the strike, and 95 in the fire sale and rebuilding. The really bad pitching years, even the fool's gold of 2003, the 100 lost years, Buddy Bell,
Trey Hillman,
to get to this point, this is the coolest thing that I've seen probably in sports in my whole life. And to even have any kind of involvement via Twitter or, a large group of friends or this podcast or a blog or whatever, to have any kind of footprint in that is really awesome, and I'm glad that I'm able to share it with you guys and everybody who follows me on Twitter and everybody who has read anything I've posted, any of that, because that's what this means the most to, is those people who have been suffering all this time through those crappy seasons like 1990 and 2005 and all that crap. So, I'm happy. I'm thrilled that they're at this point. But like Jeff said, let's go win the stupid thing. Take it all.
Let's just win it all. And like that, I want to thank all of our fans. I don't know how we've developed fans over the years, but we've had a lot of people that have followed us. We want to, of course, thank Kelly's Westport Inn. We're doing a no commercial, but count this as your commercial. Kelly's Westport Inn on the corner of Pennsylvania and Westport in Westport, Kansas City. It should be your stop if you're going to. If you're stopping through Kansas City for a World Series game, you need to be in there drinking.
Absolutely.
If you live in Kansas City, you need to be in there drinking. It is family-owned. It's been part of Kansas City for more years than I can count. It's the second oldest bar in town, and it has been family-owned. They're good people. I don't care what kind of people you think drink there, you're wrong. It's good people that drink there. And I've been up there.
We drink
there. Of course, avoid Friday night and Saturday night if that's not your crowd. That's true at every bar. But Kelly's is good people. Good bartenders, and it's got a great feel, and it is Kansas City. So don't forget that. So I take my 2012 All-Star Cup full of water, and I toast you, Michael Engel, for starting this great podcast with me a mere 3.5 years ago. That's why we did it, is because we wanted to talk about it when the Royals were good. And to you, Mr. Jeff Herr, for keeping us on the air, because there was many a time when I wasn't going to be able to make it, and then these last few months, I appreciate you guys so much. Thanks for keeping it going. I hope
and
to be around more
to
often.
You, Troy, for having the passion to make it all work together.
And to everybody that's been part of this along the runs, to Chris and him and to Aaron and the guys of the Big Dumb Fun Show, bigdumbfunshow.com every Monday at 7 p.m. Check them out. We couldn't have been here without it, and we feel like, you know, that it's all been worthwhile because this team is doing well now, and we want to talk to fans about it. So get involved at Kansas City or at KC Baseball Vault on Twitter, and, of course, all of our single accounts, KC Royalman, at Michael Engel, at The Jeff Report. Follow us. Check out royalspodcast.com. Like, listen, and download. And we hope to talk to all of you very soon and much more often. We hope to do these live shows more often. But until next week, the next time we talk to you, we might be World Series champions. If not, hopefully there's a lead in the World Series. That's awesome. Until then, I'm Troy Olson for Michael Engel and Jeff Herr. Have a blessed day, y'all. Take care of yourself, and you know what it is. Go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.